David Folkenflik is with us, reporter based in New York, serving as media correspondent for National Public Radio, also the host of NPR's On Point on some days, and he will be in Louisiana very shortly. But we're glad to have you with us on Talk Louisiana, David Folkenflik.
Jim, thanks for having me on. Great to be with you.
It's nice to talk with you, and we'll get to your appearance in New Orleans, and of course you'll also be stopping in Baton Rouge. But David, you were on National Public Radio this morning talking about the president tweeting this fake video of Nancy Pelosi slowed down, ridiculing the House Speaker, and any other president, this probably would be a huge story that would last for days, and this one may not last for hours. We are in a new day, aren't we?
Yeah, I'd say that's about 37th down in the depth chart. You know, the president, I mean, it was a kind of canny move in its way. The president tweeted out a sort of montage of moments where in public talks, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi seemed to stumble or fumble. And it wasn't actually the doctored video that he tweeted out. There'd been one slightly earlier done late last week, in which it had been doctored. That is, she was slowed to about 75% of speed, three-quarter speed, and yet the pitch of her audio, her voice, was raised back up so that the words sounded normal, even if really slurred, but in reality it was complete distortion, untrue. His attempt to reflect back on her some question about her soundness after she had suggested that his throwing her and Senate Democratic Leader Chuck Schumer and other Democrats out of the White House and talking about infrastructure as being something of a temper tantrum that needed to be intervened upon. It was a canny move. It was a use of social media and yet completely unfounded, engaging in a sense in the kind of fake it misinformation that the president accuses the media of engaging in.
How has the president affected media? And the New York Times, for example, now runs the F word in its totality on its pages. And it was a result of Scaramucci making all those comments a year or so ago that the New York Times, in its wisdom, with its editor from New Orleans, decided, hey, we're going to print it exactly as he said it.
Right. You know, Anthony Scaramucci was an outside fan, an informal advisor, and then for what seemed like about an hour and a half, the communications director of the president unloaded on a New Yorker reporter on tape, used that word, and the Times did, just as you say, wanted to reflect exactly how the president, the person that the nation has elected to lead it in its name, to figure out to help figure out how to spend its tax dollars and whether or not to engage in wars abroad, how he thinks and how he speaks. And in this case, it was how the person counseling him on communicating thinks and speaks. But the president himself is engaged in a lot of incredibly coarse language. The media, I think, has been affected even more dramatically in perhaps at least two other ways, one of which is that it is reactive, simply because the president generates so much chaff, so much distraction, and so much, for lack of a better term, content, material to work with, from the nicknames to floating seemingly extreme or outrageous policy ideas, engaging with people like the North Korean dictator in ways that you'd never seen a previous president engage, seemingly endorsing the North Korean dictator's view of the world over that of former Vice President Joe Biden's, even though the regime there had essentially tortured an American to death, Otto Warmbier, who came back to this country and died shortly after being released. You know, just each one of those things is astonishing, but the press has sort of reacted, and therefore it has been filled with material that is not its own matter. That said, I think a number of major news organizations have stepped up to the moment, some of them with hyperbole, but some of them with pretty muscular reporting to try to figure out what's going on and to hold the president and his cabinet accountable, given their hostility to accountability and to transparency. And I don't think it's a partisan stance to say that we want to hold powerful figures, government officials, leaders of the federal government accountable. There's such a resistance to information flowing to the public. You've seen the Washington Post, the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, and others, NPR included, really step up to try to fulfill that mission.
Is it invigorating or exhausting or both to cover this president?
I think I'd fill in the circle that says all of the above. You know, it is at times invigorating. It is at times exhausting. It is at times morally depleting to see the plane on which political battles are waged. I think you see a real denigration of people's characters to a degree that you just have not seen, of their motivations, real aspersions being cast without any care to tether it to fact or substance. And I think that's to the detriment of civil society.
We're going to take a short break, and we will return with David Folkenflik, the voice you hear often as media correspondent for NPR, and we're back after this pause for the news. This is Jim Inkster. Pleased to have you with us for Talk Louisiana. Jessica J.C. Kane is producing, and a few more minutes with David Folkenflik, and then we'll go to Stephanie Regal. But David is, as you know, the national media correspondent for NPR, and he has lots of stories to cover. And he's also the host of On Point on occasion, and he will be in New Orleans at the World War II Museum on the evening of May 30th. That's 2 days away. Commemorating the 75th anniversary of D-Day, and we will talk to him about his appearance in New Orleans in our remaining time. But, David, obviously this is an interesting time for people in the media, many of whom have been caught up in the Me Too movement, if you will, as people who are behaving inappropriately. Are you amazed at what has happened in our community as far as many people at the very highest levels being exposed as being predators when it comes to their personal life?
Yeah, personal life and not so personal life, often very much intertwined with and woven into the fabric of their workplace engagements and their sort of larger professional worlds. You know, I guess I was surprised. You think about people like Charlie Rose and Roger Ailes, to be sure, and Matt Lauer and others behaving in a particularly predatory fashion from what has been described by many multiple and seemingly credible accusers. Former head of news at NPR caught up in less severe but significant and serious accusations of the degree to which he made female colleagues feel uncomfortable, and of course, since he was the head of news, they were all subordinates, or almost all subordinates. I was surprised by the severity and the depths to which it involved, but perhaps I shouldn't have been for a couple of reasons. One of which is, particularly if you think about TV news, there's money and power and celebrity all wrapped together in a kind of cocktail that is irresistible in some ways. You know, there's like a flame that draws people to it, and so that goes for both the men who thought that they had that license to act without some sort of check or accountability, without it mattering whether or not it was moral or thoughtful. And there were women who found themselves on unsteady terrain, on poor footing, in part because they were drawn to this profession and believed in some of these figures because they seemed to be smart and successful, and therefore attributed them either wisdom or decency that they turned out not to have. One of the reasons I think we know so much about it is that there are a lot of smart women in media, and they ultimately, when the tide turned, they knew how to use the microphone. They knew how to use the platform to get out their story in a way that I think this happens in industries all over the country, accounting and aviation and architecture, and that's just the A's, right, going right through American society, and that women in media had both proximity to a microphone, both metaphorically and actually, and also knew how to use it, knew how to articulate their own experiences, knew how to tell their own stories because they work in the storytelling and news business. And that, therefore, perhaps there are others. One of the things I always said to colleagues is, let's go check out on service workers. Let's go talk to, my God, decades and decades of women in the military and in other places that have gone through this as well. But let's not shy away from telling our own story. And certainly I spent a lot of time doing that in the last several years.
And we have a very erudite listening audience. The listener notes that you are married to a successful woman in the media business. And I'm sure that makes for interesting conversations.
You know, my wife experienced at times certain kinds of interactions that were inappropriate. She deflected them. She felt that she could deal with them. An Army brat felt she knew how to handle herself, but that shouldn't be the standard by which we judge whether or not people are behaving the right way. It's the fact that she felt she could handle it without somebody interceding is different than perhaps a more intensive attention that she didn't receive, or somebody who may not have been equipped to handle it in that same manner.
All right, and another listener, David, notes that the previous host of On Point was caught up in this.
You know, to be specific, specific. He was looked at for questions. Tom Ashbrook, the former host, was looked at for questions of Me Too or sexual harassment. That wasn't the issue. That he wasn't found to have engaged in that behavior. He was found to have acted in a bullying way, and it was thought that a change was needed.
All right. Now, you will be in New Orleans this week, 2 days, 75th anniversary of D-Day's coming on the 6th of June, and you are appropriately coming to the World War II Museum.
Oh, I think it should be a very exciting program to honor, you know, what is really a signal moment in American history in some ways. And if you think about it, in the history of liberty and of independence, you know, there's few moments which are so important to how America progresses. You know, questions of existential defining moments. You think about the Revolutionary War, that determined America. The War of 1812 made sure that we, you know, stuck around. The British didn't somehow take it away. The Civil War, defining not only what America would be, but what it would stand for. And then World War II, and there are very few other moments. And D-Day very little encapsulates, you know, really whittled down what was at stake to the question of making this seemingly, you know, clearly perilous, seemingly suicidal mission to say we have to go onto the beaches, up those cliffs effectively, and take them away from the Nazis so that we can have a foothold in Europe itself and get in there and take them out. And this was a true world war that we had to win, and I can't think of a better place to talk about it than that museum.
Well, we look forward to seeing you, and I know you also be making a stop in Baton Rouge. And for those who might be interested in meeting David Folkenflik, I would advise you to call the station at WRKF, and you might be able to find out more about his brief stay here. But New Orleans, World War II Museum, and it'll be what time on Friday? It'll be an evening affair, I believe. So, David, do you have the information in front of you?
You know, we are taping live on Thursday night at the National World War II Museum. If there are tickets still left, I encourage people to call and check them out. And we will be broadcasting on Friday, and depending on what time the second hour of our show airs there, I think your listeners will be able to hear a terrific show if they're not able to attend in person.
Well, I'm glad you corrected me. It is Thursday for the taping at the World War II Museum, and then Friday, and On Point airs weekdays at noon on WRKF. Thank you so much. Appreciate it, David Folkenflik.
My pleasure. What a great conversation.
Take care.